Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
It's Tuesday, March 7th, and welcome to another edition of The Ben Jarofsky Show. Making his triumphant return to the show today, Dixon Romeo. The Ben Jarofsky Show is brought to you in part by SEIU Healthcare Illinois Indiana, the Chicago Federation of Labor, the Chicago Teachers Union, and Chicago Reader. ChicagoReader.com for everything there is to know in the city of Chicago, where to go, what to do, what to eat, what to drink, and so much more. Columns from Ben Jarofsky. Hey, and if you want to find more from Ben Jarofsky, all you got to do, jump on over to ChicagoReader.com/Jarofsky. That's J-O-R-A-V as in victory. S-K-Y.
Hello again, everybody. Ben Jarofsky here. We're calling this Cut a Deal Tuesday, and here's why. First of all, it's Tuesday, so happy Tuesday, everybody. Now let's get to the cut a deal part. I was bowling last night. That's the sound of those balls hitting those pins. And I got a text coming in from a good friend of mine who probably doesn't want to be identified. Everybody, all my younger friends are so nice to me. They treat me so well. They send me images of tweets because they know I'm not on Twitter. So, they, Ben, you got to see this. This one is hilarious, man. It's an exchange between J. Maul Green, who recently was a candidate for mayor of the city of Chicago. I can't remember what position he came in, but it wasn't first or second. And so J. Maul Green wrote, and I'm going to do this in my my professional reader's voice. Morning. Over the weekend, I hosted both mayoral candidates at my home to talk about the vision for Chicago's future. I've known both candidates for 6+ years, and I appreciate them for maintaining our friendships. It's a tough decision, but I'm preparing to make one soon. And then he wrote, he goes, this decision is based on logics and tangibles. It's not about emotion, noise, or the loudest tweets. It's about our city, the most vulnerable communities, our youth, and our future. Our last 4 years have been rough, and we need the next four to work for all of us. I'll let you know soon. To which someone named Star Wars Main, Star Wars Main, obviously a Star Wars fan, wrote back, and I quote, "Dog, this ain't a hard choice." Yes, Star Wars Main, you are correct. That was hilarious. First of all, the dog part was very funny. It was like bringing us down to earth. And just like the brevity of it, J. Maul was going on and on about it.
I'm really searching my soul and reading their platforms and studying all the issues before I make this momentous decision.
And Star Wars is, dog, it's not a hard choice. Yeah, you're right, Star Wars Main. It's not a hard choice. You're not searching your soul. All right, now before I go any further, let me say this. And I'm speaking in all sincerity, my distinguished guest, Dixon Romeo, I'm speaking to you as well. So I'm old, older than J. Maul Green, who I don't even think he's cracked 30 yet. And so I appreciate the fact that he's a young man and he has a full life ahead of him. And he may want to cut a deal that's in his best interest. And I respect that. I absolutely respect that. I do not believe I am a role model for anybody. I am sitting up here in my attic talking to a microphone overlooking an attic. I am a lefty. I lose election after election after election. The people I endorse always lose. The things I believe in are laughed at and mocked at. I mean, I'm laughing because it's so funny. If my life is a wall against which I knock my head. One time in my life, one time, I got to vote for a winning candidate I really believed in, Harold Washington, two times because he ran for re-election. Ever since then, that's the sound of going downhill. So if I was a young man just starting out, I'd be like, who's going to win this election? Paul Vallis, who's backed by Corporate Chicago, both newspapers, pretty much all the white people in town, or Brandon Johnson, the lefty from the Chicago Teachers Union, the union that is despised by mainstream Chicago and Corporate Chicago. The powerful teachers union, as they always say in every newspaper, the powerful teacher, like this is ominous cloud that's coming over to the city of Chicago. The powerful teachers union, they're going to take control of your life. So who, you know, if you're like analytical about it, you're like, I got a feeling Paul Vallis is going to win. Then you look at Jesse White lines up behind Paul Vallis, Walter Burnett lines up behind Paul Vallis. I just saw just today, Joyce Kenner, former principal of Whitney Young High School, lines up behind Paul Vallis. Rod Sawyer, 6th Ward Alderman, just ran for mayor, lines up behind Paul Vallis. I'm like, the writing's on the wall. I think I better line up with Paul Vallis. So I do not begrudge anyone for cutting a deal with Paul Vallis and lining up behind Paul Vallis and going on to have a profitable life. I know a lot of people who've made good money in this town as PR and corporate. I'm thinking of some right now. They were all hippies back in the day. And they lined up with the powers that be. And those, they were Richard M. Daley, Rahm Emanuel, and they're doing really well for themselves, a lot better than I'm doing. So I am no role model at all on this issue. And I urge every young person out there, if you want to cut a deal, go cut your deal. But this is not hard. Having said that, this is not hard, J-Mall. You were the guy that would call me up. I remember we had a nice interview. You were up in Wisconsin. You were like standing with the protesters. This is right after Rittenhouse killed those two activists. I remember that. Which side do you think Paul Vallis would be on with what went down in Wisconsin in 2000? Which side do you think Brandon Johnson will be on? I mean, I understand the need to take care of yourself, take care of your family. I truly believe that. I hold no grudge against anybody who's made that decision. But this is not a hard decision. It's like you got a guy who's a left, who is comes out of a movement that's committed to like social justice and fighting inequities, and you guy who comes out of the Daily Machine, who created the TIFs, which have raised everybody's property taxes to fund development in high-priced neighborhoods while depriving money to the schools and low-priced neighborhoods. This is not a hard decision at all. Right now, everybody's scared about crime. Understand that, too. So Paul Vallis is saying, cops, 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 more, 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 more. I'm like, I've been living in the city of Chicago since 1981. I've lived through lots of cops, lots of rhetoric, a lot of crime. Nothing's changed. Solutions of cops, cops, cops really hasn't helped us in the fight against crime. That's where Paul Vallis is coming from. Brandon Johnson is trying to figure out how to get his message out, because like if you talk about spending money that would otherwise go to the police, they call you a defunder. So he's really trying to figure out how to get that message out. But this is not hard. I understand transactional politics. I understand how the game is played. I know it's worked very well for many people in the city of Chicago. But this decision, ladies and gentlemen, it's a lot of things. But it's not a hard decision. And shout out very much to Star Wars Maine. Dog, this ain't a hard choice. Man, that man put it in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 words. It took me like 1,000 words to say what Star Wars Maine said in 6. So shout out to Star Wars Maine. All right, without further ado, I'm going to ask my distinguished guest, Dixon Romeo, good friend of the show. diehard Bulls fan, Southsider, and Chicago native. I want to welcome him back, and I also want Dixon to introduce our mystery guest.
Ben, thanks for holding down the show while I've been gone. Going forward, as the voice of the youth, I will be running this show. So I appreciate you for your service. I am a role model. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, I'm Dixon with Not Me We and the CBA Coalition. And my guest is our chair of our South Shore CBA campaign. Her name is Kiara Harden. Kiara, say what up.
What's up?
Welcome to the Dixon Romeo Show, Kiara.
So happy to be here. Thank you so much.
Yes. So Dix has been on the show several times talking about the CBA, the Community Benefits Agreement. And there was a, let me find this one, ladies and gentlemen. So there was, it was on the referendum in several precincts. It was on the ballot on several precincts in the Fifth Ward, which is where the Obama Center is, will be. And so the results, these are classic. I'm going to show Dixon. He can't see this on my phone. But on election night or the day after election night, I got the results handwritten on a piece of paper. So old school. From Dixon, kind of pounded himself on the chest because, man, here are the results. Second precinct, 89.5%. Third precinct, 84.8%. Fourth precinct, 88%. Precinct 5, this is the weak precinct, 73%. Media, I called Dixon. What's in precinct 5? Oh, my God, he just sent me another text, man. He's such a millennial. 91% in the 7th precinct. And here are the rest of the numbers. 98, 89, 95, 89, 85, 97.2. Precinct 14, right on precinct 14. Dixon, explain to people what the referendum question was and what the CBA is so they can understand the significance of these huge numbers. Go ahead.
Sure. I'm going to let Kiara just kind of walk folks through what CBA is, and then we can both peel through the numbers. Does that work, Kiara? Since it is my show, I can kind of do that. Okay, go ahead, Kiara.
So essentially, the CBA is us working or like fighting for protections to ensure that folks or people can stay in their neighborhood when big development comes. And in this case, the big development would be the Obama Presidential Center. So yeah, I don't know.
No, that's it. That's right. And, you know, through this campaign, right, like we've had, you know, it's gone on since 2015, right? Not Me We, the group that Kiara and I are part of, was started. We started in 2020. We joined because South Shore got kind of kicked out of the Woodlawn Housing Preservation Ordinance, right? The original kind of like win, right? South Shore got ridden out. So we're like, all right, well, you can't leave us out, right? It's the eviction capital of the city. You know, it's a neighborhood that's 77% rental. 53% of folks are housing cost burdened, meaning that they're spending more than 30% of their income on rent. So like we need protections too, right? And so we joined the coalition and kind of restarted the fight in South Shore. Kiara has been a part of it since the beginning, right? Kind of coming our first Zoom meeting, it was like three people, but it was good. But since then, you know, we've gotten a lot bigger. And, you know, one narrative we kept hearing throughout when meeting with like, you know, Leslie Harrison, the alder person, or meeting with the city, or even from the mayor, or some other groups that are like very closely aligned with like the city or the foundation or the University of Chicago, is like, well, you know, yes, of course, we don't want people to get displaced. That's very bad. But, you know, unfortunately, you know, folks do want, you know, there's the silent majority of homeowners and condo owners who are fine with that displacement, right? They know it's the cost of doing business to have nice things.
Even the former president himself said that it was something that like would be a far down the line, like our children's children would be experiencing displacement. So if like it was something that they were planning out to be something that wasn't like on the top of the priority or something that wasn't going to happen anytime soon.
Exactly. And that's not what data shows. That's not what Kiara, you could speak to this when we talk to folks on the ground. Like, what do you hear from folks on the ground around displacement in the center?
A lot. Like, they are always talking about, like, how They'll never say out front, like, you know, some people will say, like, specifically, like, that the Obama Center is increasing, like, their rent rates. But a lot of times people will talk around it and they'll be like, they're experiencing all of these things, but they won't attribute it to the Obama Center, even though, like, it's a big development that's making a whole bunch of change. And I mean, I don't want to be like, oh, we're not the anti-Obama Center, because we're definitely, we want it to come. I'm a firm believer of, like, it'd be disrespectful of me to say that, like, the Obama Center shouldn't come, because there are people in my family who want it here, right? But I'm also a firm believer that when Northwestern or any institution on the North Side does development, people there don't have to leave. Little old white ladies don't have to leave their houses. But when development comes on the South Side, little old black ladies do. And that's disrespectful within itself, too.
So what exactly would a community benefits agreement do to protect residents, current residents of South Shore, and from being displaced?
Well, I think a couple things, Ben, is that, you know, and we've talked to some of the mayoral candidates. I'm sure you'll ask about that later about this. We've talked to aldermanic folks about this. We did Kiera was there, right? We did at least 11 different teach-ins, community sessions, forums around, like, what do folks need? We went through this lengthy process over a year of having policy experts from UIC, Georgetown, folks from, you know, Howard University, lawyers, folks who used to work for the city, the state, and the county, leaders like Kiera, other folks come together, look at policies, and, like, match them up. So what we landed on was, you know, it's on ObamaCBA.org, South Shore. There's a ton of them, but, like, one thing we know is that we need a holistic housing package. So I think oftentimes what you'll see is that the city will say, okay, well, we're going to do this money. We're going to do Invest Southwest, right? We're going to build this one development that'll have 300 units, 40 of them will be affordable, and that's really good. But then that may benefit folks 10 years from now when it's built, you know, but it depends on the rate. But then what happens to everyone else on that block? Whatever happens to everyone else around that who has to live in it? We need a holistic package where all these things are happening at once. So we're fighting for protections for homeowners, like long-term homeowner improvement grants, working on property tax relief, right? Working on access to homeownership so that folks who rent and want to own can become owners. We're working on protections for condo owners, right? Helping folks be able to keep those HOA fees low, keep their building up to date. And then, of course, right, a lot of the stuff we're in there is talking about renters. It's 77% of the neighborhood, right? Eviction protections, money to keep folks in their apartments, a new ARO so you can't buy a building and knock it down and just build up luxury units. There has to be some affordability built in there, right? These are the types of things we're talking about holistically that can all happen in the neighborhood at once, that'll make sure everyone can benefit and stay, and that don't necessarily stop development, right? Because we still want, listen, when I walk on 71st Street, I still want somewhere to eat too, right? Like, I get it. We're not against that, Kiera knows, but we also know that if you don't do the housing first, it usually ends up way too expensive after the fact.
So are you hoping that one of the direct results of the Obama Center is that affordable housing is constructed in conjunction with the Obama Center, with ironclad guarantees that the housing will remain affordable for the foreseeable future, as opposed to the Obama Center being sort of the ignition that sets off Northside style gentrification?
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly, right? What we're talking about is not only affordable housing, but what are the policies in place for folks who are currently living in apartments, condos, and homes right now, mm-hmm. right? I think oftentimes in the housing discussion, you hear affordable housing, you hear more and more and more affordable housing, but most folks live in quote unquote market rate buildings, right? Most bank tenants, right? Another phrase for homeowners, right? Because you still paying somebody money on a monthly basis and they can take your home, right? they need protections too. And building affordable housing doesn't really help if the home I have gets sold or knocked down or I get evicted out of it and I don't have the credit or money to move into the new place. So it's about a sweeping package, right? That'll be, I think, a really model, not only for the city, but for the nation around how we can actually deal with development.
And I think that the cool thing about, like, what we're trying to do is that even though it is a housing policy, it really focuses on, like, the social determinants of health, right? So what are the things that we need to make the environment in which we live, work, and play, you know what I mean, thrive.
And I feel like a lot of the time, like, that's placed in housing, right? Because where you live and your environment involves so much. Like, do you work in your neighborhood? Like, do you, are your property taxes going to the education system? Like, are crime rates affecting the education system? You know, like, all of these things ultimately, like, boil down to housing issues.
And so what was the exact language of the referendum that would pass so overwhelmingly?
Yep. I will. So there were two referendum. I'm going to read the language to you now. I got to just pull it up because I don't want to make sure I say the wrong thing. But so for South Shore, the language that we had is as quote, right? So we have a lengthy list of demands. So we tried to like bundle it all into one thing to do it succinctly. So shall our mayor, alderman and mayor, support a community benefits agreement, CBA ordinance, to prevent the displacement of renters, condo, and homeowners in South Shore in light of the impact of the Obama Center and growing development in the area by taking steps that include but are not limited to, one, funding home repair, increasing home ownership and property tax relief, two, eviction protection, rental relief, and a ban on application and move-in fees, three, development of 100% income-based, and I'll talk about that in a second, housing on city-owned lots, and then four, local hiring and jobs programs. I do want to note, like, income-based housing isn't really a term, right, that you hear a lot from the city. In our demands, we have demands around, like, public housing, right? South Shore is the number one neighborhood for voucher holders, folks on Section 8, but then also affordable housing. And so we wanted to include both of those, and folks landed on that term. And we were very clear, like, 100%. When we knocked on doors or phone called and talked to people, we kind of walked folks through that. And I think it's pretty clear, like, oftentimes you hear reservation around, well, you know, folks don't want to live next to a new Cabrini Green, so we can't have all affordable or we can't have public housing here. We put it on the ballot. The language is clear. We talked to folks about it, and overwhelmingly folks were like, nah, fuck that. We need that.
Was there any opposition? You talk about the efforts you made to get people to vote yes. Was there any opposition? Were there people going around opposing the referendum, knocking on the doors and saying whatever it is the opponents say against the CBA?
If there was, they should have tried harder.
Facts. Big facts.
So in other words, you didn't see any signs of it?
Well, I think there's a couple, you know, folks and groups in the neighborhood that are like in the pocket of, I'll just say it, right, in the pocket of the university or the city. And, you know, they probably had meetings on Zoom with like the six of them, and they were like, ooh, you know, they're troublemaking again. And I think, you know, what they heard from folks is that folks understand what we're trying to do and folks need this. And So, you know, they can find another way to make money, but this isn't it.
Well, it's interesting because those are overwhelming numbers, Kira and Dixon. And my sense of it is that it suggests that the opposition, how do I put this? How do I frame this? The opposition doesn't really care about this referendum because it's non-binding, so it won't force them to do something. I think the point I'm getting at when I note that there was no opposition is that it suggests that the people who are against the CBA, and there are people who are against the CBA, didn't take the referendum seriously. Since it's a non-binding referendum, they figured, well, even if everybody votes against it, we don't have to respond to it. We don't have to follow its dictates. So we're just going to go about our business. And Dixon and Kira, what it reminds me of is referendums in the past about the elected school board. And there were many of them. And I never saw an elected school board referendum question that didn't win overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And Rahm did everything, moved heaven and earth to try to keep it off the ballot. Because he knew he would lose at the ballot. So that's my sense of things. Am I being too cynical and jaded, Dixon?
No, I think there are two pieces of that, right? I think one, the referendum in and of itself doesn't win the CBA, right? But I think it sent a clear message to the mayoral candidates and to the aldermanic folks around where folks were. And to a degree, and Kira can talk about this, it's an additional data that's pretty objective because folks got to read it. Like, we didn't shy away from, we're talking about this in relation to the Obama Center, right? Mm-hmm. We didn't just say, do you support
affordable housing in general. No, in light of the Obama Center, right? It's in there. It's being named. And we're naming things 100% affordable and public housing, right? And folks are like, yeah. And I think the other piece is that, you know, this is just one thing and like a long list of things that we're willing and ready to do between now and when we win the CBA. And so, you know, there probably would have been more money against opposing it. But I think, you know, a lot of that was spent on, you know, getting Paul Vallis to the runoff, you know, like they had other things, the real estate investors and had other things to spend their money on this time around. That's a joke. It's not a joke. But.
And I also think, Dixon, that not only like going on that data piece, the city's biggest pushback, what they don't know about homeowners and condo owners. The Pink Sinks 5 is mainly homeowners and condo owners. And it's clear that they are in for it too, that they want it too. So like, even if they, like, it's clear, like, what is your argument now? Essentially, like, what are you going to say now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, no, Precinct 5 is the one I was teasing Dixon about, Kiara. So once again, I'm going back to the results as reported to me by Dixon on a piece of paper. Kiara, look at that.
to be fair, Brent, we did get an updated graphic made. Kiara is the chair of our CBA campaign. Kiara and others give me shit about my... I format and style things. So we had a prettier graphic for Instagram.
Kiara, I'm sure that you are and just one of many young computer sophisticated people there here, but I just love this old school thing. He was just worried about me, Kiara. Better not show on a computer for him to Ben. It'll blow his mind. But the fifth precinct was 74%, 73.99, 74% voted for it. So that was like, that's where the homeowners are. Mm-hmm. So even the homeowners voted for it. Now, maybe it would have been different had there been, picking up on the joke, Kiara, that Dixon made, like had the real estate lobby, instead of spending their time trying to get Paul Vallis to the runoff, had spent their time like demonizing your referendum, demonizing you, demonizing Dixon, turning you into the devil incarnate and trying to scare people. I presume the results would have been different. But what it suggests to me, and you respond to this one, Kiara, is that people in that area want the neighborhood to, like, the residential population part of the neighborhood to remain the same. They would just like to have a grocery store to go to. Some development on 79th Street. You follow what I'm saying? They would like, we're a stable neighborhood. Now we would like to see some economic development that doesn't kick us out. Mm-hmm. That's my sense of things. Your comment.
I would agree. I really think that if you look at the landscape of South Shore, I love South Shore. I am a Chicagoan through and through, and South Shore is real. Like, I spent like, when you leave, like when you fly from the nest and you like, you go off on your own, like I landed in South Shore and it really, like, I love it there. And one of the things that I find that like South Shore has and a lot of other communities may not, it's that diversity, right? It's like South Shore is very diverse, even though it's like 70% voucher holders, the rest of that is like people who are paying like mixed income or like living in housing. So I think that for me, when I'm thinking about like the sentiments and what I've heard people say is that like they love South Shore. They love being in South Shore. They love the environment that South Shore has, but like there are definitely improvements that can be made, and those come from resources. And the only way to get resources is to have development, right? But the catch there is that it should be community-led development. And if people really do care, or if like our former president really does care about like organizing in the organizing community, it should be clear that like people who are here should stay and they should get the benefits of the museum or not even museum. What is it?
Center.
The library, so now it's the center. So yeah, you know, whatever it's going to be.
Don't look at me. It's a center. I'm not quite sure what exactly is going to be there. But let's get into the Obama name. You're up against a lot. That's a very powerful name in the city of Chicago. A lot of support for President Obama here in the city. I actually believe that if he were to get involved in this mayor's race,
well, it would be a big impact. Let's just put it that way. I don't think he will get involved in this mayor's race. He got involved in 2015, but I don't believe he'll get involved in this one. But I recall, I think I told Dixon this the last time he was on the show, Kara. I'll get your thoughts on this. There was a hearing at Hyde Park High School regarding the Obama Center. And I want to say it was I've lost track of time, but it was about 2015. It was right around there. The place was packed. And at that time, the Obamas had not decided where they were going to put the center. I was hoping they would put it on the west side. Everybody laughed at me.
I thought they could have. They could have.
They could have.
It's a lot of land over there.
There was a lot of space. Anyway, but everybody in that high school, like overwhelming, was against me. They all wanted it in the south side, either Washington Park or Jackson Park. It ended up in Jackson Park. So I said, well, the people have spoken, and once again, I've lost. But again, it was that Obama name, Kira. You know, people were like, this is what President Obama wants. This is what Michelle Obama wants, and we should respect them. They're our heroes, et cetera, and so forth. Very strong, passionate support for the Obamas themselves, the individuals. And I guess that makes it challenging, to put it mildly, if you're trying to sort of use what the Obamas are promoting for something that they have not joined. They're not aboard the CBA. As I recall, Barack Obama himself said there was no need for a CBA. So what are the challenges that means for you?
I'm a jump in, Ben, because I think that, like, I know the meetings you're talking about they had in 2015. I was at a lot of them too. I probably just didn't know you then. I was like, who is this white guy? He's probably trying to come buy some property over here. But I think there's like two pieces with that. One, you know, we can be transparent, right? Like Leon Finney used to bully a lot of tenants in those buildings that they used to own to come to things like that. So I do think, like, let's be honest about, you know, rest in peace and all that stuff. But like, let's be honest about how Rahm did public facing events in Chicago during the time, right? Like, there was a lot of, the machine was at a different stage than it's at now, right? Mm-hmm. That being said, though, I won't, like, you know, I think Kiera mentioned it earlier, right? Like, my mom, you know, her grandma, my grandmother was still alive in 2015. You know, folks are excited about it and want and do feel a lot of pride in, you know, the president, right? Because what he stands for in the eyes of a lot of people is like social progress. Right. And so you can make arguments around what does that mean in the grand scheme of things? Is that real? But the reality is that's what folks see. Right. And so I think that's important. Nonetheless, I think, like, Kiera landed on it earlier. You know, there have been doors that we've been knocking on for years now at this point. Right. And so the first time you come, folks like, well, I support it. And I feel like maybe what you're doing is against the center. That's fine. And you come back maybe 6 months later and folks are like, well, you know, they actually just they raised our rent over here and they haven't done anything to the building. You know, I think that's kind of crazy. What time is the meeting? You know, and they're like, okay, cool. And then, you know, you come back around the third time and they're like, hey, I got 10 people from my building. We're going to go vote for the referendum right now. Dixon, you don't come over here anymore. Go down the street, right? So I think, like, there's a lot of pride in that. And the reality is people can't eat that. That does not keep you warm. That does not create an office of the tenant advocate when, like, your heat's been off for 4 weeks, like the Catalyst tenants had a couple of weeks ago, right? Mm-hmm. Material conditions really do matter. And folks want to live, like Kiera said, a good life. And that takes, in a capitalist society, it takes some development. But also what that means truly is investing in people and investing in, like, public institutions and public infrastructure, right? South Shore is valuable land because of the train, because of the roads, right? Because of the housing stock, because of the lake, because of the park. And the city that it put at some point, wasn't now, put time and effort and energy into putting those things there. And the most important is the people, right? You know, when I go to Parkside, like, the building's cool, but it's like, if people like here who used to live, you know, across the street or down the street, right? Like, that's what made it nice. And so I think investing in people is, as well as public institutions, is a real way to develop in communities.
That was
and
good
I also don't think that we can't be against criticism, right? So like all of what Dixon said, yes, but it's also like we cannot be against criticizing those in which we idolize, right? Because they're human beings, they eat shit and piss just like we do, right? So we can't be above criticizing the things in which they do.
Okay, I hear you. I'm just gonna bring it out to reality. I had a radio show where they call in, allow call-ins, Kira, and this, I was on the air, it's part of before they fired me for being too lefty. Anyway, always like to say that. Just keep it real. But anyway, so I was on the air, and the story had just broken about President Obama giving a speech. I forget how, no, at some private group. I can't remember the details, Kiara. I just literally cannot remember. But it was, you're talking about events that happened 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. But it was like, I'm like, why is he even talking to this group? And it was some outrageous amount he got. And I went on the air and I go, I don't understand why President Obama is talking to this group, this corporate interest group, you know, and he's getting all this money. He doesn't need the money. He's, his book is a bestseller. He's making a fortune. His wife's book's a bestseller. She's making a fortune. You know, they're doing really well for themselves. Why are you giving speeches to this corporate group? And nobody knows what you're saying anyway. It's behind a closed door. Boom, phone, lights up. And it was a woman, she said she was somebody from the South Side, and she let me have it. She was like, don't you know? They have children to support, and they got tuition to pay. I'm like, you wouldn't think I was taking money. You would think I was taking food from Obama's table. That I went to his house and took the, no food for you guys tonight. So...
Ben, I think I hear you. And that's real. And I think that, you know, I forgot what to, I think we don't get a lot of heroes in our community, right? Mm-hmm. And so rightfully so, when folks get a hero, they're going to stick to them. And I think that that's something that's really come up in. I'm gonna pivot now because it's my show. Something really comes up in this mayoral race, right? Because okay. What it's come down to is how do people look at and view certain institutions, you know, organizations, and what they view them as. I think like even crime is an institution that a lot of folks mm-hmm. are kind of sticking to. The police are an institution that a lot of folks are kind of sticking to, and we're kind of seeing that be the playing ground for this mayoral election. Ben, what do you think about the mayoral election?
Wow, that was a brilliant move by podcast host Dixon Romigo. Wow, I'm sick of talking about Obama. Let's talk about other things. I hear you about Obama. We'll move on from Obama. You made a good point. What do I think about the mayoral election? I want to go what you think about the mayoral election, particularly Kiara. Okay, I'm going to put it to you this way. We're going to talk mayoral politics now. And so I vacillate moment to moment on the issue of who I think will win. Follow me on this, Kiara and Dixon. So whenever I'm talking to a journalist, I've just assumed Paul Vallis is going to win. Because pretty much every journalist I know are so used, like me, remember my opening riff? The opening riff I did about how like people who like Jamal Green have to make decisions like who's going to win this race and how to like what's the reality going to be if Paul Vallis wins and I've gone for Brandon, you know? And so I think like that's the mindset of Chicago, Dixon, that you can't beat the Paul Vallises of the world. You cannot beat Daley. You cannot beat Rahm. You cannot beat Paul Vallis. They will always win. This is the mindset of conventional mainstream Chicago journalists. They view with utter disdain lefties, community activists, the central driving planning principle of the last 30 years has been to move the very people out of Chicago that the CBA is trying to protect. Here, I'm just speaking the truth here in my humble opinion. So like, this is the world I live in, Dixon. When I talk to people, they're like, Ben, come on, man. You know Valls is going to win. You know. Why do you think? Why do you think Jesse White endorsed him? Why do you think Walter endorsed him? Because they know he's going to win. Walter wants to be the finance chair. Come on, Ben, wake up. Stop being such a hippie in your attic. And so I'm like, well, all the these guys really know a lot. You know, they know more than me. I'm just a guy in the attic talking to Dixon. And so, and then I talked to lefties, Kira, and they're like people who actually go door to door and knock on doors, like real true believers. And they go, I don't know anybody who's for Fallas. So that's my thing. I vacillate. I'm like, wow. So I think Brandon could win. So I'm kind of all over. And the reason why I put it that way, Kira and Dixon, is because it's like, I'm not quite sure where Chicago is. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, first of all, 65% of the city didn't vote.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So just think, everybody in Chicago is so upset about crime. Well, if you're so upset about crime, why did 65% of the people not vote? That suggests to me they're not upset about crime. Do you follow what I'm saying, Kira? I mean, if you're really upset about crime, you would vote and make your statement about how you feel about how to protect yourself from crime. No, but 65% of the people didn't vote, which strongly suggests to me that they're not that upset about crime. Your thoughts, Kira?
Well, no, I think that you have to look at it from a historical perspective. And I think that as a Black person myself, I know that a lot of people in my community, instead of voting for the lesser of two evils, they just choose not to vote, right? And I think that that has a lot to do with, like, history and, like, the way that Chicago was built and created. When you were speaking, all I could hear was segregation. Like, all I could hear was segregation. Like, because that's really what the machine and what Chicago was built on, right? So, like, when you have those infrastructures of the Mayor Daley's and the Rahm Emanuel's, it just shows me that Chicago, and then we had a mayor like who was a Black woman and who happened to be part of the LGBTQA, like, population. Like, it just makes me feel, it takes me back to, like, when people invaded the White House, right? Because they were so up in arms about Trump not being able to win again or not being able, you know what I mean? It just puts us back, like, in that boat. I feel like America and Chicago specifically cannot get away from racism and segregation and the things that are built up. And I think that that's really what people are trying to make this race about, right? I don't really know. For me, I think that, like, a lot of people are saying, like, Harold Washington was his own person, Brendan Johnson is his own person, like, you know what I mean? And even though I feel like they will be fighting, like, the same type of machine, I do think that we just gotta wait and see, right? Like, it's all up in the air. Nobody really, really knows what's gonna happen. I don't know. I feel like, of course, boots on the ground people, because, like, people are saying what they are perceiving and what they want to be true. So I don't know. Everything is up to the air, in my opinion. I'm just waiting to hear about, like, at least from Brandon, I've heard his stance on things. From Valaz, all I've really heard him say is that he's against violence, which is cool, but, like, what else do you care about?
I don't know. Yeah, and I'll say, too, Ben, like, obviously, you know, the CBA Coalition is made up of nonprofit organizations and community groups. You know, we're not endorsing any candidate. I'm just saying that to make sure we don't get in trouble. But I do think what we can and should say is that, like, you know, Kiera, when you look at what folks choose, I think Kiera talked about, like, people are saying what they perceive to be true. And I think that's probably an argument you can make about where usually what candidates do in political races, right? So I hear one candidate talking about, like, investing in people, talking about being a part of a movement, talking about being accountable to different folks, talking about a plethora of issues facing the city, right? And I think I see another candidate, right, talking only about crime, right? Like, deepening, talking about narratives, heavily talking about police being the solution to that and not deviating from that. And so when I hear Kiera talk about, like, the history of Chicago, you know,
I think it'd be fair to say that there's a candidate that's like pushing for us to have that history be different, where the lefties do and the progressives do win and we do have some change. And there's another one that's fighting for, you know, business as usual, or really a return to an old way that did not benefit folks that look like me. And so I think it's pretty clear. You know, I might tweet out to, you know, my 200 followers. I don't have a lot, but I'll tweet out to them that I might invite both candidates to my house and make a decision on it. I know it's very hard. We'll have to consider and weigh all the different options. But I don't know, dog. To me, it seems like there's really one answer, right? If a candidate can't speak to you about the plethora of issues that you face on a daily basis, and crime's definitely one of them, right? Like, South Shore is not the safest place in the world. I'm not kicking it on 75th and Dante, right? You know what I'm saying? Like, I get it. And on the way there, I pass vacant lots that should be mental health clinics. I pass buildings that should be housing. I walk through streets that aren't accessible to folks with disability. I look at folks who are talented, and I walk past schools who need resources. And I think that, like, you know, doing all of those things will benefit the other. And I think you got to invest in people. So, you know, I wouldn't advise anyone to vote for anyone who's not talking about investing in people, people without badges and guns, right? To be specific. Yeah.
No one bleeds blue. That's not a thing.
I would urge everyone, and this is me, I'm talking, not Dixon and not Kira. I would urge everybody to listen to Paul Vallis's interview that he gave with his outfit called Wirepoint, with his right-wing outfit, and talking about critical race theory. And I would ask people, when they're done listening to him talking about critical race theory, one, to please explain to me in simple, coherent sentences exactly what he's saying. Because what he's saying is so, on the face of it, batshit crazy that I think the man lost his mind. But maybe I also believe he's saying things like in code words that are, he's not coming out exactly specifically stating what he's saying. He's saying it in code words, but for some reason, the code words are so poorly framed that it's not, I'm not getting the code, you know, the barking dog or whatever they say, the dog whistle, the whistle's mm-hmm. not working. It's too high. The decibels are too. And so, like, we're either about to elect as mayor, if you believe all the journalists, a guy who stands with MAGA on the attitude of teaching Black history in schools, or a lunatic. Well, maybe the first one is the same thing, but who is absolutely incoherent. So that would be my first. You could get that interview. All you got to do is Google it. You could get that in. All you millennials and Z's out there, you know how to use the internet better than I do. You could find it. And I just find it a very this town voted 85% against Trump, and now here we are poised to elect this guy who sounds like Trump. So I'll end the show, or we're not over yet, but I'll go right back where I began it. Like, this is not a hard choice. I've had hard choices. This is not a hard choice. All right, Kira and Dixon, let's talk a little about the aldermanic race and the aldermanic races. In your neck of the woods, the 5th Ward, the 20th Ward, the 7th Ward, in the areas around where the Obama Center goes, how are the local aldermen talking, and what impact did this have on the most recent aldermanic races that just ended? And I don't care who goes first.
Well, the only candidate to keep her word on a CBA and pass it, although it was in Woodlawn, Jeanette Taylor. Jeanette, shout out Jeanette. Is reelected. Greg Mitchell in the 7th Ward got reelected. In the 5th Ward, we have a runoff. Two candidates, both of which, you know, have said they support CBA. One of them said, you know, not 100%, the other one 100%. So Desmond Yancey said he's 100% on board with CBA. Tina Holmes said she's like 85, 90% there, but there's some things she would tweak and decrease around, like the vacant lots and affordable housing, or a number of affordability and new construction. So that's what we got here. We got a, I think Desmond came through like 26%. Tina had like 17%. So they're both heading into the runoff, but both of them more or less are supportive of CBA, one more so than the other. So that's better than what we had with Leslie Hairston.
Yes, it is.
What was Leslie Hairston's position on the CBA?
It was she called it displacement theater. There's an article in Cranes where it's like, this is all machination, like a coalition that was started in 2015 when I was in college, like trying to sell pizzas to pay for my tuition. I started it back then. I got like 50-year-old community groups to start this coalition so I could run for alderman now. I haven't run for alderman. I'm not going to, but you know, that was her line, and you know, she stuck with it. I don't know how you live in the number. You've been alderman for 20 some years of a ward that's been the number one displacement ward in the city for 15 or 13 years, and you think it's displacement theater.
Wait, so what does displacement theater mean?
I don't know. You know, we thought about, Kiera was there. We thought about maybe doing our own theater, a displacement theater outside of her office, but we decided not to because she's never there, so it would have been a waste of time.
I'm just trying to figure out what displacement theater trying to understand.
I think that she was trying to use the lingo because didn't you know, like, when defund was a thing, Mayor Lightfoot tried to be like, it's a theater or whatever. I think that she was just playing off a word for a language that was already out there. I really think it means nothing.
in other words, is she saying that there's no, it's not a substantial threat, that you're just creating a phony issue? You're playing to people's emotions, and there's no reality there. Is that okay?
I guess so. But the precinct where she lives, 94 or 95% of folks, the totals are still coming in, so we'll see. But
data is important.
Yeah, said that they support the CBA, so maybe she should do a house meeting with her neighbors about this issue.
I want to have a question about defund. You mentioned defund, and I'd love to get your thoughts about this. I've watched the evolution of this term from the first moment I heard it in the aftermath of George Floyd's murder in 2020, the summer of 2020, to where we are now. And Mayor Lori Lightfoot used the term defund as a weapon to hammer away at Brandon Johnson and Chewy Garcia, I think. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think if she really used it against anybody else. And I don't think she did, because I guess she didn't figure the other candidates were threats. So, Kiera, what do you think what do you think defund actually means these days, the way it's used in political campaigns?
I think that it still means to take money away. I think that it depends on the camp, right? So to me, I feel like defund police is taking money away to figure out what we can do with it or how we can utilize it to actually restore or bring safety and security to communities. Whereas how they're trying to recognize it is really like taking money away to then do nothing with it, right? Just take the money away and then we can just hoarder all the money. But that's not really where it's supposed to go, right? So like if you look at neighborhoods that are considered valuable and thriving, and you look at the things that they have versus what they don't have, you don't see police in their schools. You don't see police driving around the neighborhoods at night. You don't see SWAT spotter camp. Like, you don't see all of these things. However, they are in minority communities. And instead of, like, when you do go to these communities, what you do see is you see facilities to exercise, you see healthy food options, you see environments that are playgrounds your kids can actually play instead of like being told that they can't, you know what I mean? Like, and you don't see those in our neighborhoods. Why? Because the funding that would go towards creating sustainable parks and the funding that would go towards creating, you know, sustainable schools in environments to play is going to the policing, right? It's going towards those shot product cameras. It's going towards putting extra policemen outside to secure the place, right? So why would we do that? Like, if Chicago cares about data as much as Chicago say that they care about data, why are we not looking at what it is saying? Like, it is saying that police do not make us safe. Why are we so against, you know what I mean, taking money away and figuring out how to utilize it? If we take money away from the police, it could go to housing policies, and then the whole, like, oh, we don't have enough funding for this, would be eradicated, right? Because we do. Because we're not funding things that do not make our communities safe. You know what I mean? I'm sorry. I could go on this soapbox.
It's going. I got a feeling you'll be running the podcast next week after Dixon. but I hear you. I heard what you said. Dixon, your thoughts.
Yeah, I think you're speaking to like the what the term actually means. But I think what's happened is that you know, whether it's because of not enough folks haven't been exposed to it in a, you know, one-to-one basis, or because there's been like concentrated efforts by, you know, different entities from the police to like, you know, varied moneyed interest to like bastardize the term in a way, like make it demonize the term, make it scary. But again, I think like if you say it plainly, like Kiara said it, do we support putting money towards the root issues of crime, right? Everyone does, right? I think anytime you have an experience where folks are dealing with violence or crime, the thing that they talk about to prevent it isn't oftentimes more police. Or even if they do mention police, the next 8 things they mention are resources that could be invested in with that money, right? You know, I talk to folks in schools, we talk to tenants, right, who are like, you know, when they have issues, like, well, the landlord needs to fix this, and we need jobs for these kids, and the schools need this, and the bus don't come on time. If the bus came on time, people would get to work, and they wouldn't be out here doing XYZ, right? So you're talking about public transportation, funding housing, funding education, funding mental health, right? Funding jobs. That is all stuff that, you know, if we spend 40% of our budget on policing, should go to that, right? So this is just me and Kiara speaking as not me, we members. You know, obviously the coalition doesn't deal with policing, right? We're about housing and protections. But I think that that's just really important in this moment in time. I'll say it personally, right? You know, I had a stepbrother that I lost, right, to gun violence. The police officer killed, right, my stepbrother, Harif Augustus. And I think, like, the reality of the situation is that does not make anyone in my family feel any safer. And so I think that, you know, these are all things that when I think about the community, like 71st Street doesn't feel safer that the police killed someone there. What would make things feel safer is people to have opportunities, right? People to be funded and secure and have their material needs met. And so I think, you know, when we look at taking it back to the mayor's race, how candidates talk about violence and public safety, you're talking about communities, you're talking about people who are Chicagoans, who live in the neighborhood, and is our response to them to further harm them and cause further harm in communities, or is our goal to keep people safe while reversing these trends and making it more safer? And I think, you know, I think both candidates have made it pretty clear where they stand on that issue.
I did not know he was your stepbrother. That's you caught me off guard with that one.
Sorry, but I'm full of surprises.
Yeah, I talked a lot about that. His murder. I have not seen what happened subsequent in the last, I don't know, 3 years. So that's a story that's sort of out there. So you kind of caught me off guard there. I'm going to get myself together here and continue the conversation. I think defund the police, the phrase itself has become a weapon, a political weapon. And I don't know how far it will go. I watch how this Chicago race is being covered outside of Chicago. I could have led with that. Dixon and Kiara, there was just a little blurb in the New York Times about how important it is, significant that Lori Lightfoot lost. This is a right-winger saying this, a guy named Stevens, a right-winger for the New York Times, because it shows that people are disgusted with crime, and he hoped fervently that the citizens of Chicago would elect Paul Vallas, because Paul Vallas would spend more money on police and crack down on crime. And that will halt the flight of businesses from Chicago and the descent of Chicago into chaos, which is really straight out of the Darren Bailey playbook when he ran for governor against J.B. Pritzker. It's been picked up and championed throughout the country. So people, like, the way they spin the Chicago election is though it's either you're for crime and chaos or order and police. And so that's how it's being spun. Eric Adams weighed in on it too, the mayor of New York City. So I'm like, wow, this is remarkable how this this issue is being used, you know. And Trump tried to use it against Biden in 2020, didn't work. And Darren Bailey tried to use it against J.B. Pritzker in 2022, it didn't work. And now here it comes. It's coming back a third time, you know. And I don't know. I have no idea if it will work. Any final thoughts, Dixon and Kiara, before I let you go back to your busy days?
Thank you so much for having me. This was fun.
You're welcome back anytime, Kiara. You passed the audition. You can see it's not a tough audition. Dixon, you have any final thoughts?
We have a meeting at South Shore Library, March 16th. It's our what's next kind of like post-election meeting with folks. You know, we got good referendum results, but obviously, like you said, that's not enough. We got to keep organizing. And so inviting folks in South Shore to come out to that. Ben, you can come out and listen in. It's at South Shore Library from 6 to 7:30, March 16th, Thursday. So next week.
Very good. And I will hold off on conversations on what the Bulls have to do to make the play-in.
But I support, shout out to the concession workers from Unite Here who went on strike the other day, or did a one-day, was it a strike or walkout?
I think they called it a one-day strike.
And okay, the one-day strike when the Bulls played the Pacers was that Sunday. I know a couple folks who were going to go to the game but didn't. and so I'm glad they didn't and didn't cross that picking line.
Yes, I think one of the folks was named Dixon and the other named Ben. And Kiara, we just couldn't do it. So we were planning this for so long and looking forward to it. But we saw eye to eye on that one and just thought, no way, can't do it. And so, God, you guys could have had to walk out of another day. I don't know, whatever. You know, it's, I know they're not doing it. It's like can make it convenient for Ben and Dixon. So, but I'm with them 100%. It's ridiculous. It costs a lot of money to go to a Bulls game. A lot of money. Yeah. And come on, guys, you could spread it around a little bit. Mm-hmm. And by the way, Bulls, you can end this thing right now. Zach Lean, DeMar DeRozan, okay? You know, AC, Alex Caruso, stand with those concessionaires. That would end it. All of a sudden, the money would be there, Dixon.
It'd be a very short strike. Super supporting the players, kind of stepping up and getting out there. So yeah, they should do that. I knew him, I'd text him, but.
I know. I don't know him. we need more Craig Hodges's on the Chicago Bulls. You know what I'm saying? All right, Dixon, thank you so much. Kiara, thank you very much for taking time to talk to me. And also want to thank producer Chris for doing an outstanding job, as he always does. Give yourself a raise. Take it out of petty cash. Take care, everybody.
And remember, you can catch previous Ben Jarofsky shows, get Benny J bonus interviews, and so much more at chicagoreader.com. And find the Ben Jarofsky Show all over the internet on your favorite streaming and podcasting platforms.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.